though, so give me a second to get this all settled. I usually use paper to do this sort of thing, so I'm a little nervous something's going to go wrong. I do want to welcome everybody here this morning to the worship services at Marion Street. Especially want to welcome any visitors we have. I didn't see a whole lot, and that's probably a good thing because I don't want the quality of the preaching to decide if anybody wants to place membership or not today. Our regular preacher, Kevin, is out of town. I think we all know the situation there with he and Brooke are out in Arizona in the process of adopting a new baby. So he's asked me and a few others to fill in for him. Some of the visitors that are here today are actually my parents sitting right over here. I got some, I got a sister and some nieces here today as well. But my parents are some of the newest residents of Alabama. As a matter of fact, they've been here for less than 24 hours. So please welcome them. And they have not decided whether it's Alabama or Auburn yet. But they are from Indiana, so probably football doesn't really matter anyway. And on that note, Jennifer and Doug and Tammy, at least for today, we've got two more Hoosiers in the house, so now we're even. Since I was wanting to talk about this, Kevin asked me to do this a few months ago, but it just kind of so happened that my parents were moving this weekend. So talking about homes and houses has been on my mind, and especially this weekend. We drove up the other day, 6 hours up there, loaded a bunch of stuff, drove 6 hours, unloaded a bunch of stuff. With the time change, everything going on, I'm a little tired. When I get tired, I get a little emotional. So if I start crying like a baby, just give me some time. I'll be all right. But the house that my parents lived in has been in my part of my life, actually my whole life pretty much, very special to us. My grandparents bought it in about 1973, 1974. And I can remember spending Thanksgiving, Christmas, a lot of dinners there. We have a whole bunch of cousins and aunts and uncles. It's a small house, but somehow we all fit together in there. And just pulling up to the house, we'd see them either working out in the yard, in the garden, or as they like to do in their older years, they'd sit on the front porch. And just coming around the corner, they lived in town, coming around the corner, just seeing the house and seeing them sitting there, there was something comforting about that. That was my grandparents' house. Well, my parents actually bought that same house the summer between my freshman and sophomore year in college, which was 1991. They had college back then. My first Christmas home is kind of strange because it wasn't the house that I grew up in. I came home and their furniture was in the house, that kind of thing, but it just didn't feel like home. It was my grandparents' house still. Well, after several years of owning it, they began to make changes to the house. They started adding on a room, like a kitchen, bathroom, changes like that, even a two-car garage. So it started to look more and more like their home. So after a while, I realized that it wasn't so much the house that made it feel like home, it was my parents. And so then when I'd come home, it actually felt like home. And now that it was considered home for me, we started to have more and more memories there, a lot of good memories. And Margaret and I actually started dating at that house, believe it or not. We made a kind of a last-minute trip to Indiana for a wedding, one of my good friends from high school. And on that trip, I can remember it vividly, we were sitting on a deck at that time. They had a wooden swing, and we were sitting out there and started talking about it, and that's when we actually decided to start dating. I say decided, but that's when she gave in to start dating. So things turned out good from there. But all of my nieces and nephews and even our children, that's the only house that they know to be their grandparents or my parents' house. So a lot of special memories there. I know it's just a house, but when we look at it, when we pull up to it and see it, all those memories come back. So that's a success story about a home. I want to talk to you about a different story about a different home. And that's a home that I helped create. And before I get too far into this, I have to give a little backstory. I do want you to know that this has a happy ending, okay? I think it's a little rough in here for me, so hang in there. So the backstory is, when Margaret and I first got married, we were living in Tampa, in the Valrico area. And we had a wonderful congregation where we worship. We had friends our age, We always get together and play cards and games, just do things together. Nothing ever expensive. All of us were poor, starting out for the first time. It was a congregation that we got involved teaching a lot of classes. We went to a lot of parenting classes ourselves and marriage classes. The group had a lot of good leadership, and we just felt like we were really growing there together spiritually. And we actually felt like we had a really strong faith, so strong that we felt like we could just take on the world. We could move anywhere we wanted to and thrive, basically. So we decided to move to North Alabama. And the reason for that is this is about a halfway point between my parents and Margaret's parents, at least by the mileage on the roads anyway. And my sister has lived here since 1987, so we had opportunity to visit here. We actually knew kind of what the area was like and just felt like this is a place we could move to and really thrive spiritually. Well, it turns out it wasn't that easy. Limestone County is a very difficult area to move into. And let me explain that because I know a lot of you are from Limestone County. Sorry. We first got here, we found a congregation that we felt like was a good fit for our family. They had kids that were our boys' age at the time, and we just really thought we could grow there spiritually. And it did seem to be pretty good at first, but we began to have a really hard time kind of finding our place and our role in that congregation. And for quite a long time, even after years, we would actually blame that congregation for us not being able to see our role in that congregation. And we know that the part of that blame fell on us as well. The reason for that is we put too much emphasis on the physical relationships that we had between our brethren there. And when they didn't provide that spiritual need for us, we blamed them. And we began to falter spiritually because we lost our focus on where that should have been. But we were still okay. About a year and a half later, going through all that, just being at that same congregation, and just kind of floating along, I met a man through where I work. And he had, his wife was actually one of our clients. And he and I began to talk, just small talk. And he had a rental house up in Ardmore that he wanted us to rent. And this man was about somewhere between 80, 85 years old. And this was a two-story old farmhouse. And it had probably about 25, 30 acres on it. And he just couldn't take care of it anymore. So he lived in a house right next to it, but still owned all that property. So when he and I were talking, he said, "Hey, you know what? I need a lot of help taking care of this property. If you will come up here and help me with it, I'll give you a really good deal on the rent." So one day after work, I drove up there, which not being from here, Ardmore seemed like the other side of the world. We get up there, and I see the house. And it's been a rental property for about 10 years. And most of the renters that he had, he said, were not good renters. They didn't take care of the place. The lady who had just moved out had actually gotten kicked out because she wasn't paying her rent. And she basically trashed the place. She all clothes, pots and pans, and just dirty in general, just not kept at all. And so looking at the house and being the overly optimistic person that I am, I said, "Sold." So, men, if you want to test your marriage, make a deal on a house like that without even saying one word to your wife. And as you can say, we're still married, so it was a good test. We passed. But this became our new home. And it required a good bit of cleanup, and I mean a good bit. We got family involved. They came and helped us quite a bit. And it just needed a lot of love. And it was just a house that we really liked a lot, just had a lot of personality to it, even though it was really old. And this is where all the normal childhood milestones started happening. The kids started going to preschool and elementary. They'd already kind of knew how to ride bikes and stuff, but they had places there. They could play in a barn. They could go down to the pond and creek. And they say that home is where your heart is. And that's our heart truly was in that home. So things were okay at this house. But nothing was really getting better at our local congregation. And we began to get really frustrated, and I hate to use the word depressed, but it almost kind of felt that way. And we started drifting farther and farther away from God. And then as time kind of passed by, we had Harrison and Grayson, but then we wanted to continue to try to expand our family and everything. We were still pretty young, and we started doing other things. We weren't fitting in real good at the congregation, so we started making other friends in the world. And there's nothing wrong with that, I know that, but these were worldly people that really became a bad influence on us. And I could sense Satan starting to get a hold of us. And we did a really good job. This is actually, I need to put this out there. This is really hard for us to just kind of put this out there. So we did a good job of faking it. I'll just go ahead and say it. We were faking it. We could do one roll here, one roll there. But we were letting Satan rule our life, basically. And then we would go to church, you know, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. We'd take care of everything. But then I want to say the final straw was we had a miscarriage. And I don't care how far along you are, that's hard. And so that at that point, when that happened, I kind of feel like that was the climax. Satan was there. I mean, he was in our house. And I don't want to get into any details about the things we did, got involved with, but suffice it to say, we were just letting Satan rule our life. And here's the really hard part. Here's what I decided to do as the leader of my home. And I did nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I don't know why I didn't do anything. That's the hard part. I'm kind of scared to admit it, I guess, that I was losing control. I don't know if I was stubborn or it's just going to be too hard to change. And this went on probably for about a year or so. And I knew Satan was there. I mean, we knew it. And every time I would get close to home, like I said, this house is up in Ardmore, and I worked in Huntsville. I'd be coming up 53, and I'd see that house start coming into view. And every time I'd see it, I'd start just getting this knot in my stomach. And I just knew I wasn't doing what was right. I knew I wasn't leading my house like I should. I just knew we were just on this terrible path. And then I really started thinking about how much of it was my fault. And I was still doing nothing about it. So about the time, I want to say that we just about lost our faith completely. And I mean, just about done. I don't want to call it a miracle baby or anything, but we just happened to get pregnant with Hannah Jill. And I don't know what happened or what clicked, but we really started to realize at that point that we were on the wrong path. And we were not going to raise our kids in a home like this anymore. And I don't know the exact moment, but I do remember sitting down with Margaret and saying, we need to change things. I'm tired of this being lukewarm, tired of faking it. Either we're going to just leave God forever, just quit serving forever, or we're going to serve Him 100%. And I'm going to be honest and say that wasn't a split-second decision, that we truly pondered it. We really, through lots of tears, lots of prayer, we just kept telling ourselves, is this really worth it? Do we want to go through all this? And thankful to say we chose God. But we needed major changes in our life. It just so happened that I got a new job. It all just kind of fell into place that way. We decided to go to a whole new congregation, which wasn't Marion Street right away, but it was pretty quick after that. And we decided to get a whole new house. We had to get out of that house. And it's actually the house that we have now. And those things, you know, they don't happen overnight. It takes a while to make major changes in your life. But we made them. So now when I come home and I have this peaceful feeling. Same kind of thing when I'm getting close to my house. It doesn't come into view right away, but as I get closer and start to see it, I just feel good. You know, I love coming home. But it actually does feel like that safe haven that I really want. But in the back of my mind, I would still think about how I just screwed up so much at that other house. I wasn't a good leader. And I just had a hard time letting that go. I mean, I really failed miserably at that house, and it's just hard to let that go. Even though I felt like, okay, we've forgiven each other, let's move on, it still was hard to let that go. And as it just so happens, my job takes me on the road a little bit. Very rare that I'm gone overnight. I'm just, you know, around North Alabama, but it would take me up through Ardmore once in a while. And as I would get close to that house, you know, I'd still pass that. The house sits right off of 53. So as I'd get close to that house, I'd get that same just nauseous feeling of, man, there's that house again. There's where I screwed up. And it made me feel bad for several days again. And that happened pretty often for a few years. But then, a few years later, this actually happened just a few years ago. One day, I'm driving by this house, and I started getting that same old sick feeling again. But when the house came into sight, I could not believe what I saw. When I saw that house, it was gone. It had been completely leveled. There was no plumbing sticking out, no concrete slab. Just gone. There's a parking lot sitting on it right now. How many of you here know where Mildred's Cafe is? That's where our house was. That parking lot on the west side was our house. So anytime you go there, please remember this lesson for yourself. Don't remember this part. But that house was gone, and I was so excited. And I called Margaret, and I'm freaking out. She was so confused. She's like, that should be a sad thing. You know, that house is gone. And I'm like, no, don't you see? Don't you see the symbolism? All those bad memories, that time when Satan ruled our lives, is just, it's gone. And I couldn't help relate that to our sin that we have in our lives. You know, when God forgives us of our sins, he does just like that house. It is gone. He doesn't remember it anymore. That guilt that sin holds over us, it shouldn't hold us. God removes it completely from his memory. We can take comfort in that. God just takes it, removes it. Romans chapter 3, verse 23 reminds us that we all have sin in our lives. And I know some people here in this audience today are struggling with that, thinking that your sin's too great, that God's not going to forgive you. Well, we have some examples of great leaders in Scripture who committed some pretty horrible sins. I know sometimes we don't think lying's a big deal, but Abraham and Peter, they were liars. Moses and Paul, they were murderers. David, poor David was a murderer, adulterer, liar, bad father, everything. And he's the one that they say is a man after God's own heart. Those men did not let that sin define who they were. They knew God forgave them. And I'm not naive enough to say that there's no earthly consequences sometimes to the sin that we have in this life, but no matter what you've done, God will forgive it. I look back now at that time in our life, and I wonder what went wrong. And when I really stop and think about it, I realize I just wasn't the leader of my home. When Satan came around, I did nothing to protect my family. So men, here, I'm talking to you. I'm including myself. We've got to lead our homes. And I'm not talking about just financially providing for our family. We've got to be the spiritual leaders in our family, because we're lacking. And I don't know why we're lacking. You know, maybe because it's just too hard. It's just not easy. Maybe we're out of our comfort zone a little bit. We're afraid our wife or our kids are going to be mad at us for a while. I can tell you this, society doesn't want you to lead your home in the way God tells us to. They think that if we do it that way, that we'll be arrogant, chauvinistic, macho men. But look at our society right now. You know, there's men not leading their homes, and look what's happening to our society. Satan is just taking over. And again, I'm not talking about just being providers, but we've got to protect, not just physically from physical harm only, but we've got to guard their hearts. You know, how many of you here really pay attention to what movies your family watches, or what TV show you watch, what music y'all listen to, what friends you have, what friends your kids have, places you go, places you let them go? What kind of example do they see in us? There's lots of men here in this congregation right now who are very hard workers. Y'all provide really nice homes, nice things for your family. But what example are we giving our children, our wives and our children, spiritually? Are we teaching them to love God? Or are we just leaving that to our wives? Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4 If y'all want to read that sometime. It starts off with, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath." The second part of that verse says, "Fathers, teach your children." It doesn't say, "Let the women take care of that." It's on us men. It's on us husbands and fathers. When we're here at worship services, what kind of attitude are we showing about the worship service itself? Are we excited? Are we happy to be here? Do the kids, do our wives, they see us participating in the worship? And I'm not talking about just getting up here and leading singing or prayers. I'm talking about even sitting in the pew. Are you singing along to the songs? Are you paying attention? Can you get your family here to worship on time? Do they see us keeping God as a priority in our lives? Or is it just something that we do because that's tradition, that's what we've always done, that's kind of what's expected of us? Is it really our faith? What we honestly believe to be the right thing? And if we're here for any other reason than because it's the right thing or the God-honoring thing to do or a priority, then our worship is in vain. And I want to emphasize again, this is on me too. I'm not just blaming everybody else. This is on me. Men, we have to lead. It's on us, and it's hard, and society does not want it to happen. Joshua chapter 24, verse 15, I think y'all know that. It's on pillows, blankets, framed on the wall. It's where Joshua had said, "Choose for you this day who you're going to serve. Either God, either our God or your other gods. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." When Joshua did that, he was standing in front of millions of people. And he said, "I'm not going to force you to do this." Well, he didn't say that, but more or less, it's kind of inferred. He said, "Choose this day whom you're going to serve. You're going to lead one way or the other, either with these gods or our God. As for me and my house, we're serving the Lord." And I want to look at something. It says Joshua said this. Joshua was the one who chose. He had to actually make a decision. It didn't just happen. And he's the one that actually said it. It wasn't Joshua's wife. It wasn't his kids. It wasn't his parents. It wasn't his in-laws. He's the one that chose. So, man, we need to choose to serve God and to be the one in our family that's making sure he's the one that's being served and that our children understand why he's the one we're serving, not just because, hey, let's just do this for no reason. And again, I want to say this doesn't just happen. It takes effort, it takes perseverance, and it's a daily thing. Don't be lukewarm. I'm afraid to say older men. I guess men don't really care about that kind of thing, but Wayne, Buddy, different ones that are here, Steve, of course my dad, other ones. I really appreciate the leadership that y'all have given to me. Those men can be examples to me, to David and Brian, guys about our age. But Brian and David, other guys my age, we've got a responsibility to help these younger guys. We got Josh and Austin and Chris, other guys here that we need to help each other. And again, it's not going to happen overnight. Even you younger guys can teach us that are a little bit older. And if we do not lead our homes, I'm going to tell you from experience, it's only a matter of time before Satan comes into our homes and takes over. And he may already be there. It's our God-given duty as men to lead our homes. Don't do what I did and allow your insecurities to stop you from being the leader that God has commanded you to be. If you're a Christian man, when you got married, you made a commitment to take on a role with your family to be that leader. When you decided to have children, you made that commitment to teach your children and to lead them along with your wife. It's not a passive role. It's an active role. There's something else that requires action, and that's deciding to become a child of God. Christianity in and of itself is not a passive way of life. It's not for weaklings. It's hard, but the reward far outweighs the struggle. And I know that we all want our families to gain that reward one day. But man, I'm telling you, we've got to be the leaders in our home. got to do it no matter what it costs. Let it start in the homes with us. I want to take the advice of Miss Janelle Bailey. I was kind of wondering how long, how short this lesson would be. And she said, I want you to get up there, say what you got to say, and sit down. So I'm going to take the advice of an older, wiser woman. And I just want you all to really think about this. Society, again, does not want you to do this. And it's not easy. We got a lot of young men here that are going to be gone real soon. I've failed many times. I don't want y'all to go through that same struggle. We were very blessed, very fortunate. We made it through it. God helped us through it. You know, I look back and I don't know how we made it. But somehow God was there and gave us a second chance. There could be people here today that you just feel like, man, I screwed up so bad. My family's so screwed up, or my personal life is screwed up. I don't know what else to do. God will forgive anything. It does not matter. Any sin you can think of in your mind right now, we can look through Scripture and find that same somebody else that did that same thing that was a great leader for God. Don't put a limit on God and feel like He won't forgive you. If you truly have a repentant heart and are willing to ask for forgiveness and be willing to change, repentance is a change, and you can do that. If you just need the prayers of everybody here, if you have anything that needs to be done, and you need to talk to us about anything like that, you can let your request be made known while we stand and while we sing.